Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestling.
Fucking finally.
Today we're going to be talking about the fifth serial of the fifth season of Doctor Who, The Web of Fear, which consists of six episodes that aired from February 3rd, 1968 to March 9th, 1968. All of these episodes exist except for episode 3, which is missing. We got access to these episodes from a Mr. Matt Golden, who you can follow on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. And
Shout out to Matt, you're the best!
Thanks for getting us those episodes, sir.
True facts!
Today we have a special guest with us. You've seen him, you haven't seen him before. You've heard him before on this very same podcast.
I've seen him.
You may have seen him. He's on the internet. He does things.
He has a face and exists in space.
Christopher! Stefan! Cherry! Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. I just want to say, people are making a lot of assumptions about my having a face and existing. Like, I resent that. I'm a very private person. People don't need to know I have a face.
But if they've seen Brains, they know you're Billy Jack.
Billy Jack has a face. Maybe I'm just a really good actor.
Nah, I've put you in things. I know how good of an actor you are. I think we should mention before we jump into this podcast, this is take number 2/3. We tried to record this a couple days ago. Our cat unplugged our recording devices and everything messed up.
Maliciously. She cackled when she did it.
She probably did.
She didn't know. She wanted to play.
We didn't realize it had come unplugged and messed everything up and just kept going.
Yep.
And then we're like, oh wait, we haven't been recording for like half an hour.
Yeah, we said a lot of stuff. It was really funny. It's funnier than this is gonna be. I want you guys to be disappointed at what you could have had.
If you don't like this episode, just know it used to be better. Rate and comment accordingly.
We really got into episode 1 in detail.
We're going to do it again.
So episode 1.
In addition to watching the episodes, I also read the novelization for the serial. So I'll have some additional comments about the way that maybe the novelization differed. I also want to say, because we mentioned this in our first go-through, the writers for this episode, who also wrote the last abominable snowman episode.
That one. The downright nasty snowman.
One of them went on to write Holy Blood and Holy Grail. Is that what it's called?
I believe that's what it's called. Isn't that the book that, like, the Da Vinci Code was based on?
Yes.
That's new information. I'm learning that for the first time, and I am shocked. That is weird, though.
Yeah, he's like a real-life Travers. That's what I said last time, too.
We can't, guys. I won't have this all throughout the whole damn thing.
That's the only time I will do that joke. But seriously, though, I want to see a version of this where Travers is Tom Hanks with weird hair.
Because, I mean, Travers is himself with weird hair in this serial.
We've seen The Great Intelligence again. Let's see Travers again, and we'll get Tom Hanks.
Perfect. I'm down for it. But yeah, I mean, apparently the guy who wrote this episode went on to, like, write that book. It was, like, not just, like, a book he just wrote. He did all the research himself and stuff, too. So it's not like he was just, like, I'm collecting this data, you know, and, like, making a book about it. He, like, did a lot of it himself. If that makes sense, what I just said. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay. Anyway, let's talk about the Web of Fear.
Episode 1.
Which I have called A Reused Yeti, which is based on a disused Jetty Yeti joke from the last serial. And they're reusing Yetis for this serial, so.
And you're reusing that joke. Last one.
This episode opens after the really traumatizing cliffhanger of the one before it. We just watched somebody die traumatically in the time vortex.
Everybody else is clinging on to bits of the TARDIS for dear life, trying not to fall out. The Doctor, Jamie, and Victoria.
The way that he dies, just because of, like, how the effect isn't that great, It somehow makes it much more harsh because like they can't like make it smooth or like subtle or like realistic looking. It looks like a thing that if it happened to a human body would be incredibly painful because it's such a kind of blunt effect. And it makes it more terrifying.
It upset me.
To be fair, we don't know if he actually died.
But that's part of what's kind of terrifying. What happens when you fall into the time vortex?
He could have just wound up somewhere.
He could have, or he could just be floating through it for like eternity. We don't know.
Or maybe some parts of him landed in different wens. Like, there could be someone in, like, 8th century France just walking by, and then, like, an eyeball hits him on the head.
That would be great to do in Modern Who. Like, there's just this, like, one town where body parts just randomly appear, and they've been collecting them, and it's eventually just gonna be Salamander.
That's super messed up.
Okay, so anyway, everyone's trying not to fall out of the TARDIS. The effect for that is just them wiggling on the floor.
Oh, yeah. That's what you do.
Well, the camera is on its side.
I mean, they still do that. They did that in, like, Firefly and stuff.
That's how ships work.
I don't know if it was just me, but it felt like Victoria's skirt was shorter than it was in the previous episode.
There was a moment where, like, the camera lingered on it. Not in the scene, like, in a later scene where she's getting, like, dragged away by, spoilers, Yeti. And, like, I remember thinking, oh. Yeah, this is, like, shorter. This is, like, we're lingering on this. This is uncomfortable.
Yeah, apparently she got much more comfortable.
And the reason I sort of noticed it in this scene is that she's writhing on the floor with the doctor sort of like...
He's got his hand around her waist.
Yeah, it made me feel uncomfortable. I don't know why exactly, but it just made me feel uncomfortable that this old man was semi-fondling Victoria. But anyway, the doctor's like yelling to Jamie, who's above them, to fall into the TARDIS console and stop the TARDIS from killing everybody. He stops and writes the TARDIS so it's right side up, even though, how does that all work?
I've asked this question before. Is the interior dimension aligned with the exterior dimension so that when the TARDIS is on its side, the interior dimension is also on its side?
It seems to be. It seems like that's a design flaw. It seems like something they might have fixed by, like, the Mark 60 TARDIS. Because the thing is that this TARDIS is an old TARDIS.
How does that work in space, though? In space, there is no real... up or down or...
Yeah, we've all seen The Wrath of Khan. Well, you guys haven't seen The Wrath of Khan. Have you seen The Wrath of Khan?
We have not seen The Wrath of Khan.
That's for another podcast.
I mean, there has to be artificial gravity inside the TARDIS, but how does that relate to what's outside if they're in space?
Yeah, if anything, they should be floating.
It's very confusing.
I'll buy it because Salamander died.
It's kind of weird to say because these are serials, but like this show is more serialized than I remember it being. I always tend to think of these as like little like 2-hour movies or like little independent films that go one after the other and there's not much connection in between. But that's not how they were watched. It was like a week to week thing. If you're watching this, like you're not thinking, oh, that one's over and this is starting. You're just thinking, oh, that's what happened last week. Last week was the Salamander thing. And this week, this thing is happening. I imagine it must not have felt quite so delineated between serials as it does now.
Especially considering this one is sort of like a straight up sequel to The Abominable Snowman, which happened not that long ago.
If this was in Modern Who, The Abominable Snowman was like the thing that happens at the beginning of the season, and this is the one where we come back to it, we're picking up the plot thread. Like, I don't think there's ever been this much of a direct sequel. Like, Time Meddler came back, and like other villains have come back. This is a lot more like a direct sequel. Lots of things came back. The Intelligence came back. Travers came back. This is the first story where they're very much assuming you've seen the last one.
I mean, it's not like when they brought the Cybermen back. They were just like, yeah, they're back, and that's it. I still don't even feel like they completely explained why they were back. Like, the entire planet exploded and stuff, and they just sort of glossed over it.
Because they're cyber. Duh.
Yeah, it's not as relevant to the plot. But, like, this is like a continuation instead of just a new story, which we should probably get to. So they close the door, the TARDIS levels out, and
immediately the doctor is like, hey, all right, let's go on an adventure. Let's go somewhere else. And Jamie and Victoria are like, can we have 5 seconds to just, like, catch our breaths? Like, we just saw somebody die horribly.
Someone who looked like you. That kind of matters.
Then, like, we almost died. It was all very traumatizing. I need, like, 5 minutes tops.
It was really traumatic. Like, Victoria's skirt shortened out of fear.
And the daughter's like, no, come on, let's go somewhere. Pick a place. They're like, you can't control where we go. And he's like, the hell I can't. Like he does every time. But then he immediately says, let's see where we wind up. Like, that's the very next line. Like, let's see where we go. You don't know where you're going. You just said that you did and then immediately contradicted yourself.
I don't know why he gets so offended.
I don't know. You ever, like, bought a thing and, like, people are like, you don't even know how that works. But, like, I know how it works. I know what I'm doing.
Oh, you mean, like, my DSLR.
Or whenever I write something. Like, I know how to write. What are words?
Now that I think about it, it's exactly like my DSLR. There's so much shit on that camera that I don't know what it fucking does, but I know to point it at things and click, which is about probably how much the doctor knows how to fly the TARDIS at this point.
Yeah, that's what he does. He points it at things and clicks.
He's a point-and-click doctor. So now we take a brief little sidestep to another location. We go to a museum where there is a Yeti. We see Travers from the last, the Abominable Snowman. And it took me way too long to figure out that that was the same character because, well, he's 40 years older and they've put makeup and facial hair on him. So I didn't.
Also, who remembers?
I did not realize it until Victoria told me.
I realized it way earlier because I was like, is that supposed to be the same guy?
I think I had the inkling that, like, I think this might be the same guy, but, like, I couldn't remember what that guy looked like. Would it be him? What, wasn't that guy, like, a reporter or something? I thought he was a reporter for some reason. I was just really confused. Like, I didn't think he was a professor. It seemed weird.
You thought he was a reporter because he thought that the doctor was a reporter.
I thought he thought they were competing reporters trying to get the story.
Fun fact about that actor, his name is Jack Watling. He's the real-life father of Victoria. I read something, he was very excited to be in this sequel, this serial, because he'd get to act with his daughter again.
And they were estranged. This is the only time he could see her.
So it's happy and sad, really.
So the Yeti is in a museum. It's off, basically.
And Travers is wide-eyed and,
bushy-tailed.
Mad scientist-y looking.
He's freaking out about it a little bit.
His daughter, Anne, comes in, followed by the museum owner. Basically, the museum owner is like, your dad's trying to fucking get this Yeti off of me because he wants all the money and stuff from it. And he's trying to scam me out of it by saying that it's bad. In the novel, it says this man is very tall and distinguished. But in the actual episode, he's kind of short and yelly.
I always wonder, like, if, like, the novelizations were written as sort of a way to, like overcome the production problems of the show. In the script, it calls for a really tall guy. We couldn't get that. I felt like the novels were, like, maybe a way to do right by the script. Because a lot of them were, not this one, because this was obviously written by, like, the future not Dan Brown guy. The man behind Dan Brown.
There's some novelizations that are written by the people who wrote the episodes.
Yeah, but wrote the episodes. I always thought, like, it seemed like, no, this is what I really meant. And this was really about communism.
And also had a giant spider in the third act.
That's a thing another person said.
Part of the reason why Travers is freaking out is because he's taken all this stuff back.
From Tibet.
From Tibet, from the previous serial. He's brought a bunch of Yetis back. He's brought back the little control spheres.
The sphere balls.
And one of them is missing.
And his daughter's like, oh, you know, you probably just left it somewhere. You know how you get.
In your fake old age.
And he's like, well, just go look for it. And they leave. And the museum owner is very happy about this. But then we see that the sphere ball is hanging outside of the museum window.
And it smashes through the window. It goes inside the Yeti. And then something weird happens. The Yeti gets ugly.
It gets significantly less cute.
The Yeti gets claws and some large glowing eyeballs. And a neck.
It gets a more obvious head.
A delineation between the head and the body, whereas before it was just sort of this chicken nugget shape.
Yeah, it was grimace shaped, like, you know, big round kind of hips, and it was just sort of like a little baby chick. Now it's got like broad shoulders
and like a little bullet shaped head.
It's definitely obvious that there was an attempt to make them scarier. I don't know how successful that attempt was.
It made them less visually appealing.
I like them as little fuzzy chicken nuggets.
But you like cute things, so.
I love the idea of cute villains, yes. Like I love the adipose. That's ideal to me.
I mean, the reason they did...
cute, fluffy, little evil creatures.
I was reading about it, and that is exactly why they changed it, is because they wanted it to be more frightening.
It was like they took a gremlin, but instead of turning it into like a lizard creature, it just turned into a Furby. To be fair, terrifying. We should all be scared of Furbies.
I will say in the this is not mentioned at all in the novelization, any of the mutate, like it mutating into another thing, which is probably fair because it's a robot and doesn't make sense for it to do that. But I think the creators thought it was especially terrifying. They recorded this little PSA thing to air before it with that starred Patrick Troughton as the Doctor, warning people that it was going to be scary, you guys. He's like, so kids, if your mom and dad are really scared, let them hold your hand. And I was like, that's adorable.
So while all this is happening in the museum, back in the TARDIS...
Well, I don't know if it's at the same time necessarily, because this would have had to have been in the past, right?
I mean, okay.
Time and relative dimension in space. That's all I'm saying.
So, meanwhile...
Did we mention that the Yeti killed the museum owner?
We did not.
Museum owner is dead. And it was very easy because he was very short and yelly.
Back on the TARDIS. The Doctor is eating a sandwich. And Jamie is getting really frustrated because he was told to watch for this light to do a light thingy on the console. And it did a light thingy. And the Doctor's like, nah.
No, it didn't.
I don't think so.
And Jamie's like, why would I tell you that it... Like, I know the difference between a light being on and a light being off.
My favorite thing is the Doctor's just, like, on the other side of the console and just, like, refusing to even, like, come and look. It's like, it did a light thingy. And it's like, nah. It's like, well, come here. Like, no.
No.
I'm eating my sandwich.
I can't eat my sandwich on that side of the console.
Can I say, by the way, I really love when people in Doctor Who are eating. I enjoy watching it.
I like seeing domestic TARDIS things because it's very rare that you get to see it. It's a weird living situation that it doesn't quite get explored, how weird a living situation it is.
It's kind of like they're living on a bus, a space-time bus.
With a swimming pool. And movie stars.
And sandwiches.
Basically, the light is, like, indicating that they've landed, but the Doctor's like, we've not landed. But then Victoria comes in, and she's changed outfits, and she really wants Jamie to notice. The Doctor's like, Jamie, you should notice this. And Jamie's like, oh yeah, it's fine. Anyway, the light came on.
Because he's far more concerned with the Doctor.
And then Victoria's like, hey, that light just came on. And the Doctor's like, are you guys fucking with me? That it did not come on. Why do you guys insist on messing with me like this? It's 2-1, Doctor. Maybe the light came on.
It's like, why are you guys lying about things that are happening just out of my line of sight?
And he's like, if the light came on, it means we landed. Let's look. And so he turns on the scanner, and they've apparently landed in space.
So really, they're just spaced.
Yeah, I don't suppose you can land in space. You can only stop.
You can land on something in space.
You can't really stop in space either, because, like, motion is relative, and there's no absolute stop. That's more detail than we need to go into.
So then we get a wide shot of the TARDIS just hanging in space. And suddenly a web starts forming around it. The TARDIS is webbed with fear!
Ah!
Or just webs.
Of fear.
They see this on the monitor and they're like, whoa! Then we go back to Earth. This has to be at least, I don't know, some amount of time later. Months, maybe? Even a year? I don't know.
Yeah, because suddenly there's many Yetis.
But what's interesting about this scurial, it sort of skips over the part where... Everyone is like, ah, Robot Yeti, what's that about? And just cuts right through the chase of, like, we're being invaded. How are we going to stop this? Which is sort of interesting because we've already been introduced to the Yeti. We as an audience have already gone through the initial meeting. We don't want to spend that time watching people discover the Yeti again. So it was really smart to just cut to the future and the Yeti are everywhere now. No one's like, ha, that thing looks stupid.
And then gets murdered to death.
Its eyes are so big. Why? I wish it looked more like a fuzzy chicken nugget.
But we are in, like, this army base. The army captain, Captain Knight.
That is a comic book name. That's a superhero name. I want to know more about the adventures of Captain Knight, who fights crime as a knight while being a captain.
But he's being interviewed by this fellow named Chorley.
That's all you need to know.
In the novelization, Chorley is described as being very trustworthy looking and handsome and blah, blah, blah. And he's very charming. And none of that is true. I mean, in the book, it says it's a cover-up. I mean, he's not really charming, blah, blah, blah. He just appears that way, and he's really just a sleazy doucheball. But
doucheball.
In the episode itself, there is no layers. He's just, it's douche all the way down.
He acts skeezy. Everyone knows that he's skeezy. Like, in the serial, everyone is working under the assumption that this is a skeezy motherfucker who works for a skeezy paper and is up to skeezy no good. What if the novelization is the story written by Chorley? And that's why, like, some of the details are wrong, like, because he's gotten all this information second or third hand.
I'm for that theory. So he's being interviewed by this guy, Chorley, who's a sleazeball. Who to me kind of sounds like David Tennant at times. It's mostly in the bits where he's trying to be charming and like very enthusiastic and stuff. Anyway, he's interviewing Captain Knight because the commanding officer or whatever, the guy above Captain Knight has just died in a Yeti attack, I'm assuming. And he's interviewing about it. He's like, yeah, it was really sad. Hope the new guy's pretty cool. All right. And he's like, was that good? And Charlie's like, you speak in quotes, which I thought was funny. He pieces out, and Travers comes in, and then Charlie's like, well, I'm going to interview Travers now. You know all about these Yeti and stuff. And Travers' like, I'm not talking to you. Bye.
Travers is having none of this.
He's very anti-media. He's very anti, like, newspapers, very anti-tel. Like, he's very much like one of those people. He's like, I don't even own a television. He's not interested in it at all. He's like, I just like fiddling with my balls.
Jesus. Back on the TARDIS, the Doctor has finished a sandwich, and he is fiddling with some fiddly bits, and he is making some sort of machine.
To take care of this web problem.
Jamie asks him what this machine does, and the Doctor says, nothing.
And Jamie throws the device, and is like, oh no. But then he's like, it's because I haven't plugged it in yet, Jamie.
It doesn't do anything when it's off.
So he plugs it into the console. He tells everybody to hold on. The Doctor does. He's like, in the book it says, this will either fix the problem or blow the TARDIS up.
Which is honestly, like, just how the second Doctor rolls. It's like, 50-50 chance, this will either save everyone or kill everyone. I don't know.
Let's try it. And when he says hold on, Jamie really does. He just grabs a hold of the Doctor, which, if you watch him closely in this entire serial,
He's always grabbing someone. There's one scene where he's out looking for something with, like, a couple army guys, and he's got one of them by the arm, and he goes to walk away. And so he puts his hand on the other army guy who's closest to him. Like, literally just goes from one to the other.
He's like a scared dog attaching himself to people who can save him.
I think he's just afraid of falling out of the scene. But anyway, they're like, holding on, and then he does the thing, and then nothing happens. He's like, oh, that wasn't too bad. And then they all fall down.
It's a good joke.
And they've landed, and they're inside a building somewhere or something. It's like, we're inside something, and it's very clearly a subway.
It takes them a long time to figure out that they're in a subway. Way too long. There's not that many different kinds of, like, configurations of tunnels and train tracks. There's not that many options.
Victoria's like, is it safe to go out? And the Doctor's like, probably not. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Jamie and Victoria not knowing it's a subway makes sense.
Yes.
The Doctor should know.
Well, I don't know how often the Doctor's been to an Earth subway so far.
I mean, he and Susan lived on Earth for a while. Susan went to school.
That doesn't mean he knows about the underground.
Why not? He knows all sorts of random bits of, like, Earth trivia.
We're saying this as if he doesn't say in, like, 5 minutes, oh, we're in the underground.
He also says, it's so weird how we keep landing on your Earth. And I'm like, you have no idea.
It's like one of the first times it's ever been, like, lampshaded, which I love.
At this point, he actually hasn't landed on the Earth that much. Not as often as, like, say, series 1 with 9. I remember being like, are they ever going to be on something that's not Earth?
By that standard, it's, like, not likely. But by the standards of there are so many planets in the universe, they've landed on Earth more than once. Space is really big.
I don't think there's been any other planet they've landed on more than once other than Earth.
There was Scarrow a lot.
And there was one time where they just jumped forward in time and not space. The one with the monoids and all that. Mm-hmm. The Ark, maybe? Anyway, in the book it, like, mentions how smart Jamie is for catching on to how, okay, if this is, like, an underground train place, why aren't there people here? The doctor's like, well, it's probably, like, nighttime.
It's late.
It's, like, midnight or something. Let's go. And they go up, and it's like, no, it's the middle of the day. Also, they do the, it's quiet. It's almost too quiet.
Too rough.
Which they did before on Future Earth in the Dalek invasion of Earth. They've done that. It's too quiet.
Apparently, when aliens invade Earth, shit gets quiet. What aliens really want from Earth is some peace and quiet. Earth is too loud.
They just want us to shut up. But Jamie's like, well, I'm going to go ask this guy what's going on. There's a guy over here leaning against a pole. Covered in webs, clearly dead. Let's go see what he's got to say. And he touches him and he falls over dead.
Because he's dead.
He's very clearly dead.
And dead people have other priorities.
That was like a straight up Ian moment. Let's go talk to this clearly alive person.
He's covered in cobwebs because the Yetis have guns that spin web like Yetis do. It's never properly explained why the Yetis spin web. Other than, like, at some point in time, they were bitten by a radioactive spider.
Well, that's their upgrade, when they changed into their new form.
That's why they have the eyes. They're, like, more spidery now.
Claws, just like a spider. They're, like, 8 feet tall, just like a spider. They have a big ball that goes in the center of their chest,
just like a spider.
And so after Jamie finds the dead guy, he almost gets killed himself. By just jumping on the train tracks. And the doctor's like, oh my god, stop. Maybe I should have warned you earlier, because you're not from this time period, instead of warning you after you've jumped on the thing that can kill you.
He's probably thinking, this guy's really smart. He noticed there's no people here.
But it's alright, the doctor tests the thing. He's like, there's no electricity going through it, so we're fine. But you could have died, so be careful. And so they go down the tunnel, they find a power cable. And then some lights start flickering on, and they see some army people heading their way, so they run and hide.
And then my favorite scene happens.
Oh, yeah.
That peeks around the corner. Always good.
They're hiding, and then the army people pass by, and they'll pop their head out one at a time, which they seem to do a lot.
And it's cute every time.
So the doctor's like, I'm going to go follow this cable and see where it goes. You guys track the military people, see what they're doing, but don't get too close. You guys go do the more obviously dangerous thing while I just go see what they've plugged in. So they split up, and then Victoria, like, immediately walks into a spider web and screams.
To be fair, those webs clearly killed that other guy.
Also, to be fair, I've done that multiple times in my life.
Well, I've never...
Just walking along, and all of a sudden there's a spider web on your face, and you're like, whoa!
I don't think I've ever really yelled like that. Like, screamed. Never? I've never went...
Because there might be a spider on your face. That's the possibility. Aren't you worried about there being a spider on your face?
Not really. Should I be?
That's where spiders live.
So Victoria screams, and then they're like, oh, I hope the military didn't hear us. And Jane's like, probably not. And they keep walking down the...
guys, the military heard them.
The military heard them.
That's what makes them the military.
They walk by a guy who's not even really hiding that well. He's just in a crevice.
Who does in Doctor Who, though?
They walk by, and then he pops out and pulls a gun on him. He's like, who are you guys? And this guy is Arnold. Staff Arnold.
Because he is a staff sergeant, I guess. But everyone just calls him Staff. Which is weird, because it makes him just seem like he's like... Like a roadie for a concert. I just like imagine he's got a shirt with Staff on the back. They just call him Staff, and it's like I just expect him to be like carrying things around.
I just remember Arnold because I actually didn't know his name when we watched the episode, and I'm like I only know his name because I read the novelization. I just called him Sir Mumbles. I don't know. I couldn't understand his accent very well.
It's a very specific accent. It's from a very specific region of the UK. And I'm blanking on where he's from, but, like, it's not just mumbly, it's, like, a specific accent.
It's a hard-to-understand one, and he gets a lot of exposition. So, anyway, the doctor follows the power cable to the end of its line, and it's connected to some big old boxes of explosives, but then he hears a familiar sound.
It's the beep, beep, beep of the little Yetis.
It goes, boop, 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 boop.
That's not
it. Right? That's how it goes.
No.
It goes... Boo, 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 boo. Right?
No.
It goes, boo, 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 boo.
That's not even beeps. That's a whole goddamn score.
Boo, 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 boo. That's how it goes.
Sure.
But the doctor recognizes the melodic tune of the sphere ball and hides underneath the subway platform. And the Yeti come by and just start webbing up the explosives.
Spider Yeti can do the things that those things can do.
We go back to the base where, by the way, Anne is there, Travers' daughter. Captain Knight slides up behind her while she's working on something. And he looks over at the other army guy like, hey, look at the flirting I'm about to do. I'm going to be really good at it.
Oh,
and he says, what's a girl like you doing in a place like this? And in the novelization, he doesn't even get to finish it because the novelization's like, that's a hella cliched line. And even calls it out for being cliched because he says it and then Anne finishes it. It's cliched line.
Can I say it?
But then she replies.
She says, well, when I was a little girl, I thought I'd like to become a scientist. So I did.
Anne is an amazing character. Everything that she does is great. It's an amazing line. Like, it immediately establishes her as, like, kind of a badass. It's a reputation that, like, that she keeps up throughout the serial. She is, like, pretty consistently awesome throughout.
This is the second serial in a row where we've had a consistently awesome character, like her, and then in the previous serial we had Astrid. As much as I love Victoria, I would prefer either of them to be the companion.
The problem, because I feel like with Victoria, is she's not very consistently written all the time.
Because sometimes she's like, I do what I want, and then sometimes she's just...
She runs into a spider web and screams.
Yeah, it's very flip-floppy. I want Astrid and I want Anne.
Because they also have that hair, so they're all kind of Barbara. So really, we kind of want Barbara back. Anne also reminds me of a third Doctor companion named Liz Shaw, who was like the first third Doctor companion who was on for a season. And then they got rid of her because she was too smart, which is awful. Because she's a great companion. And also had a pretty badass hairdo. Just saying. Liz Shaw was great.
Speaking of the third Doctor, I have questions. We're about to get introduced to the Brigadier. When does the serial take place? 40 years after...
The Abominable Snowman, which I think... According to the novel, it was set in 1935. This will have to be 1975.
There's this thing in the classic, in Doctor Who fandom called the unit dating controversy. And this is sort of where it begins. Because of the events of this serial, we find out in the next, in the invasion later, that because of this, like, unit gets formed. And, like, in the invasion, unit is formed, and it's been, like, 4 or 5 years later. So it should be, like, around 79 in the invasion, and unit has just been around for a little while. It's pretty new. So, like, any story where unit is a thing is after the 70s, basically. If unit is around in, like, the Third Doctor era, all those stories should take place, like, in the 80s, because it's after the invasion. By the time they got around to doing the Third Doctor serial, and, like, he was working for unit, they sort of forgot about that. And kind of assumed that everything was happening in present day, or for that time, so like the 70s. They don't make any hard dates about when things happen, but like, they kind of forget that it was supposed to be in the future. And then it really becomes a problem because there's a fifth Doctor serial called Modern Undead, which I really like. It's a very good serial. The fifth Doctor meets the Brigadier. The Brigadier says that he's retired, and that he retired in like 76. Which is, like, a couple of years before UNIT was even founded.
Huh. So it's good to know that it's a thing, and not just that I was confused.
No, it's, like, a thing. It's a problem. They even reference it in Day of the Doctor. There's a great line where, like, Kate Stewart, it's like, I need something for my father's files. They're like, when? It's like, 70s or 80s, depending on the dating protocol.
Here's my theory. The only reference we have that this takes place 40 years after the Tibet thing...
Is how old Travers is?
Well, Travers says, oh, that was 40 years ago. But Travers seems a little like...
Absent-minded.
Yeah. So maybe it was only like 30 years.
I'll buy that.
There may be future things that fuck that up.
When we get to the invasion, we'll see what they say. Because that's when they start formally talking about UNIT as a thing.
Because I'm pretty sure they don't say a specific date in this serial. They just say 40 years after... And again, that's just Travers saying it. We'll figure this out.
We'll get to the bottom of this thing that's been a thing for years.
We'll fix it.
The Watchathon of Rassilon, solving your plot holes. So then Arnold brings Jamie and Victoria into the base. And is like, hey, I found these guys. And Knight's like, put them in a thing until I can interview him because we're busy right now.
Busy blowing this place up.
Yeah, we're going to explode that tunnel. And then Anne's like, hold on a second. Did you say there were people? You found people in the tunnel? Was there anyone else in the tunnel? Because I'm not blowing up this tunnel if there's other people in the tunnel.
Think Which I this love how through. Like the reaction to that is like, oh yeah, good idea. All right.
So Arnold goes in and is like, hey, by the way, were you guys with anyone?
And Jamie, trying to be sneaky.
Bless him.
He's like trying to be smart. He's like, no, just us. Definitely no one else. Definitely no doctors. Just us. But even more, they're like, are you sure? Are you sure there's no one else? They're like, no, there's definitely no other people. Just us. I'm like, there's not any other people in this tunnel that, like, hypothetically might explode.
So he's like, all right, thanks. That's all I needed to know. Leaves and is like, yeah, no one's with him. Go ahead and blow it up. Comes back and is like, it's a good thing nobody was with you because we're totes about to blow this place up. And Jimmy's like, what?
Wait, the doctor. No. It's too late. They press the button. Then we see the doctor, like, full on hugging the explosives,
and
by the way.
He's definitely leaning on them, yeah.
The crates glow. And it throws him off of the explosives, and that is the cliffhanger.
He is a Halle Davis serial.
The cliffhanger kind of gives it away. Clearly, the explosive didn't explode. That's not what that looks like. They just sort of glow because they've been webbed up. It would make more sense if, like, they cut before we cut to the doctor, and we just saw them, like, setting off the explosives, and we're like, did the doctor explode? But, like, we know that the doctor didn't explode. Now we're just, like, looking at these glowing boxes and we're like, those boxes are glowy. That's weird.
Definitely a less effective cliffhanger. But that's the end of episode one, and now we're in episode two. Joseph.
Well, before episode two, the end credits have an added bit of an effect that we actually don't see until later in the serial. Because I was like, what is this? Is this just the new end credits now? But no, it's an effect from later.
It's a great effect. It's the web effect that they have. They have, like, the webs that go around that they have that they shoot out of their guns. But there's also, like, this web fungusy stuff that is, like, taking over the tunnels, which isn't really explored any till episode two. But it's basically, like, there's this webbing that they have, and then there's also what I think are, like, suds being pushed around over the camera.
There's a lot of malevolent suds in Doctor Who. Especially, like, second Doctor era. There's another episode later that's just tons of evil suds.
But it looks really cool, and you know that the people who made it liked it so much because it's on the end credits of every single episode this serial. And I don't blame them. It does look pretty cool.
It kind of looks like bacteria, like on a slide or something. But that's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two. There's a humongous fungus among us.
Oh.
I knew it was coming for multiple reasons.
Still just as offended.
I added humongous this time.
Doesn't make it better.
We all saw the cliffhanger and know that the doctor isn't dead, but Jamie is not. And it basically opens with Jamie being like, oh my god.
I killed the doctor.
I killed him.
They're going to go look for the doctor just in case. Be like, yeah, let's see if we find a body. But then they're like, there was no explosion. There was no blast. Like, it definitely went off, but there was, like, I think, but, like, there's no, we didn't hear it. And there's no indication that anything happened. Like, our sensors or whatever didn't pick it up. And they're like, did the doctor sabotage it?
Which, to be fair, if I was in a tunnel with explosives, I would probably sabotage it if I knew how.
Yeah, they're really mad at the idea that the doctor tried to save his own life.
Okay, you would disable a bomb?
I added the qualifier if I knew how.
I would run very, very fast.
You would run fast.
I can run fast when I'm scared.
That's true. You have the weirdest, most intense adrenaline reaction I've ever seen in a human being.
Fear is a superpower.
I'm that mom that lifts the car off her baby. That's just me when, like, someone's tickling me.
I was gonna say, that's normally when you, like, accidentally throw me across the room when you're done being tickled.
Wow, way to sound like we're in an abusive relationship.
I'm just saying.
You know how you throw me across the room?
You have an intense fear reaction.
Please don't make that one of the quotes for this episode. But my thing is, it's not only is it weird that they seem really mad that the doctor tried to save himself, also no one ever considers the possibility that the Yeti stopped the bomb from blowing up, even though that's exactly what happened.
But they're aware of the Yeti's existence. It's not a secret.
That's why they're trying to blow up the tunnel. It's not just for shits and giggles.
The base gets this call in from this truck that's delivering supplies, and they just hear a bunch of screaming and yelling and shotguns and then nothing.
Which is always the kind of ominous call you hope to receive.
Chorley is, like, recording it.
The worst.
And he's like, that's going to make some great radio or TV or whatever I do.
I think he's a print journalist.
Well, that's going to make great newspaper when I put this audio clip in. And they're like, well, we're going to go see if there's the supply still there at least, or anybody that's still alive. And they're like, hey, Chorley, you want to come with and see some real action? He's like, nah, I better stay here and write stuff.
Well, you didn't Weasley.
Think so, you sleazeball.
Didn't you say? You said douche ball.
You know, a ball like douches have.
So Travers is like working on his fears. And Anne comes in and says, because they've been interviewing Jamie and Victoria about stuff. And she's like, these two people that they found know an awful lot about the Yeti, stuff that no one should know. Like, they know that they're robots, and nobody knows that, like, only the Army and stuff know that they're robots.
Which, the Army know that they're robots? Why do they shoot at them so much?
Well, they say later on that if you get them right between the eyes.
But they're not aiming. Well, to be fair, though, robot doesn't necessarily mean bulletproof. There's lots of robots that you can shoot, and then they stop.
But you figured they would have figured it out by now.
Right. You have, like, you're not just, like, randomly shooting at it and hoping for the best.
You figure once they got to the point that they're going to blow up a fucking tunnel on top of them, that they know bullets don't work.
It's that thing of just, like, for the man that has a hammer, every problem requires you to shoot it.
Right.
Travers is like, well, I'm going to go see who these people are. Why do they know so much? And he starts like, who are you? Why do you know so much? And like, doesn't recognize them. But then
Jamie doesn't recognize him.
But Victoria is like, hey, you're that guy, but with a beard.
She's like, I know you. You're played by my dad.
In the novelization, he recognizes them immediately. There is no, who are you? He's just like, oh, hey. What the hell? You guys are from 40 years ago and you haven't aged a day. I grew a beard.
Joe's mentioning that because he's very envious.
I can't grow a beard.
If it makes you feel better, this guy did not grow on this beard. This is a fake beard.
He has a real beard, though, in the previous serial. Not like this. He had a real one.
He's not wearing it. He's just carrying it with him.
So the army guys get to the truck and start getting supplies. But then, surprise, there are Yetis. And they try to shoot them. Some of them get webbed. They've sort of set up this, like, barricade of explosives. And they're like, well, I'm going to go back. And then when they get close, I'm going to shoot the explosives and blow the tunnel and them up. I remember watching it being like, that sounds really dangerous and like you're going to die. But it's not addressed in the episode, but is addressed in the novelization. They're like, hey, couldn't that kill us? And he's like, yeah, but we don't have anything else to do.
These guys have a real hard-on for explosions. That's their first answer. They're like the Mythbusters. They're like, how can we find an excuse to blow something up?
But the Yeti web the explosives up. The army shoots the explosives. Nothing happens. Well, it glows. The Yeti just keep coming. And the Yeti corner them. Anne is talking with Travers. She's like, Victoria seemed really upset, so I made her go make tea to calm her down.
Why did they always do this? I believe this is like the second time where they've just had like, oh, we don't know what to do with this female companion.
She'll make some tea.
You know what will make you feel better? A chore. For me.
That benefits me and me alone. That'll help you with your problems.
Don't make yourself tea.
And then Anne's like, so every time you've come into contact with these Yetis, the doctor has been there. Maybe the doctor controls the Yeti. Maybe he's bad. And like, Victoria's coming up to the door with her tray of tea and overhears this. And then it's like, oh shit, I need to go and warn the doctor. Runs off.
And then they immediately both go, eh, no, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, but she runs off to like warn the doctor. And this sets up nothing. It never comes to anything. It's just a waste of time.
It's mostly just moving pieces around so that people are where they need to be for certain plot points to move forward. So they're like, we need only these people to be at the base so that this one specific thing can happen. So we're going to set up this thing so that everybody else is out of the base, like, looking for this lost person, so that that thing can happen at the base. It happens a lot, of just moving the pieces around so things can happen without people bumping into each other. None of it really is natural. Because there's a lot of, like, let's go to that thing, and they're like, oh, no, let's go back.
I am kind of glad that that doesn't come up too much, though. There's an unfortunate thing about Doctor Who, because, like, they're always landing on, like, new places, and crises are always happening. It's an unfortunate thing because the same things are happening so often that it's sort of reasonable to assume if you're meeting the Doctor for the first time that he might be bad or he might be connected to this thing. But it's a boring scene to watch over and over again. And it's kind of a problem of that, like, you can't write this scene over and over again, but like, if you don't write it, the people it seems weird that they wouldn't think of it. It would seem unnatural for them to not like be that way, but also it's a waste of time. So I kind of almost appreciated them like, do you think it's a thing? And they're like, nah, it's not a thing. Just that's it. We're done.
We've acknowledged it. So we're not weird. We're not going to waste your time.
I mean, Travers had a legitimate point too. He's just like, no, he went to like a lot of trouble to try and save those Tibetan people. Why would he do that? Anyway, back to the army surrounded by the Yeti. Then the riders are like, fuck, I don't know how they get out of this. The sphere balls make a new whistle, and the Yeti just leave.
They are supposedly called off to somewhere else to do something else.
I don't know why they couldn't have killed the people before leaving. To be fair, there is a guy in this group that at this point in time you don't know is under the control of the Great Intelligence. And these Yeti are sort of just... they don't, like, discern very much, so maybe it was like, we don't want my inside guy getting hurt, so we'll just have him leave. Which there is this whole sort of the thing sort of thing of people being like, oh, is this person bad? Is this person bad? It's only really brought up, like, in dialogue where they're like, oh, wait, we should maybe think, is this person bad? It doesn't really affect anything they do.
No, it doesn't. It's just a thing of every once in a while, everyone kind of remembers it. And it's funny because we're about to get to the next episode wherein they're introducing a person. The way that he's introduced is sort of kind of meant to make you a little suspicious. Because, like, he was, like, on that car, but no one sort of knows him. Everyone's just kind of like, I think, like, part of the reason is that it's supposed to make him sort of suspicious and, like, thinking, like, who is this guy? Like, he seems like he's smart, but we don't super know what he came from. It would kind of make sense if he was working for the intelligence. We're kind of supposed to be not know who he is and be kind of weird about it, but he just happens to be the Brigadier.
We totally know who that is.
It's kind of like one of the most famous characters in Doctor Who.
Right, in the novelization, even, it was written way later, so it just straight up says... hey, this is the Brigadier. He's going to become important later, but not yet.
He's not the Brigadier right now, though, right?
He's just a colonel.
Well, he's technically not even in the story yet. We don't actually see when they meet in the serial. It happens off screen.
Again, I thought that was supposed to make us more suspicious of him, because we don't even see his, like, first scene. We don't even see the meeting. But it was literally just because Patrick Troughton was, like, out for a week, and they couldn't shoot it.
It's in the novelization. And it's like, this is would be a historic meeting, though they would not know it yet. So historic, it wasn't actually in the show. Once the Yeti leave the army, guys, we go back to the base. And there's just these two guys talking.
Just hanging out.
Just being exposition-y and like, hey, how do you take out the Yeti? This is how you take out the Yeti. We're low on grenades. Oh, by the way, we have a map that shows where the web is spreading. Just a lot of exposition, but like in like almost a sort of joking manner between these two
characters. They're definitely... they got a real comic relief vibe going on.
There's always those, like, two guys in, like, a Shakespeare play.
Do they generally work in a graveyard?
Yeah, exactly. They work in a graveyard, or they're, like, security. Like, in Much Ado, they're, like, security guardy kind of guys. But there's always, like, these couple of guys. They're generally lower-class guys who are just kind of commenting on the story. That's what this scene feels like. It feels like one of those scenes.
I was immediately like, they are so dead. And I was not wrong.
He wasn't wrong, and I was sad.
I mean, they don't die right away, but they die.
I mean, everyone dies.
Eventually.
Jamie and the army guys are heading back, and then they start hearing some singing. And it sounds like he's just singing scales, but it's another army guy. It was the driver of the truck. His name is Evans.
And Evans is also the worst. Like Chorley, but in a way that is fun.
I wouldn't say he's sleazy. He's just a coward.
He also has the best face.
He looks kind of like Ernest. He looks like he should be saving Christmas or going to jail. There's a lot of very prominent cheekbones in this. Evans has very prominent cheekbones. Staff Arnold has very prominent cheekbones. There's a lot of, like, cheekbones that you could, like, cut a paper on.
I think he looks, Evans looks a lot like Lee Evans, who's a comedian, who is also in New Who.
It's like Planet of the Dead, right? With the...
the double-decker bus. And I think he's actually a scientist for UNIT.
They should have played it like he was the great-great-great-great grandson. Give or take a great, depending on the dating protocol.
But yeah, Evans has got these, like, real big eyes, that he uses a lot, very effectively. I like Evans, even though he's kind of the worst. He also, like, the way he gets introduced, he's, like, being kind of jokey, and they're like, hey, you're in the army, stand up straight, and tell me your name and your rank. And he's like, I'm Evans, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, shh, there's Yeti around. And he's like, oh, sorry. I'm Evans, da 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 da.
It's really weird that he's in the army. Like, everyone else must have died.
It's Slim Pickens.
He's, like, ported in from, like, a Don Knotts movie. Joe really liked that.
I may have seen a lot of Don Knotts movies and Ernest movies, so you're, like, really in my nostalgia zone right now.
That's why you like this character. You like him so much because he's that vibe.
But Evans said that he saw the web and he was getting away from it, but he saw Yeti coming out of the web carrying a pyramid.
Jimmy's like, ooh, I got this one. We just gotta shoot that thing, we're done. We can all go home.
I wanna smash it. And the army's like, well, we're not gonna do that. We're gonna go back to base. And Jamie's like, but I wanna smash it.
Wanna smash it.
And the army's like, well, then you can go and do that. We're not your dad. And Evans is like, I'm going to help Jamie smash the pyramid. And they're like, okay, you're not with us either, so do what you want. And the army leaves. And Jamie's like, thanks, man. Thanks for helping me go smash the pyramid. And Evans is like, nah, I just didn't want to be with the army people. I'm bolting the next chance I get.
The difference between Evans and Charlie is that Evans is honest.
With Evans, you know where you stand. You just know that it's not great.
Evans may lie, but it's just to, like, get out of shitty situations. Whereas Charlie will be just skeezy to, like, help himself. And
I mean, Evans just wants to help himself, too, but it's like, I don't know.
He wants to help himself not die, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fair. Trying to help yourself to not die is very looked down upon in this serial.
Evans is leading Jamie around for a while until they get really lost. When we, like, cut back to them, they're on a map and Jamie's like, why didn't you tell me about the map? We are, like, so far off of where we need to be. And he's like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know why you listened to me at all, to be honest. I've just been wandering around.
And so they start heading in one direction. They bump into a wall of bubbles. Bubbles coming down the tunnels.
It was really great. I guess it's supposed to be like the fungus is moving really quickly, expanding. But
the
it's
spreading web. The humongous fungus among us.
It is just a huge thing of suds pushing down a tunnel. I liked it.
And so they turn around and like, we'll go down the other way. And then there's bubbles coming from both sides. And then there's this loud noise. And then they collapse to the ground holding their heads. And that's the end of episode 2. There's a humongous fungus among us.
You want to say it one more time?
There's a humongous fungus among us.
You feel good now?
I do. And now we're into episode 3, Barricaded by Bubbles.
Oh, because of the bubbles.
And the bubble.
No, yeah, it's alliterative.
Big old bubble barricade.
Big bad bubble barricade.
There you go.
The Yeti comes out of the bubbles carrying the pyramid, and Evan shoots the pyramid, and it explodes. But the bubbles are still there, and Jamie's like, the fuck?
He is pissed, you guys. He's like, I was so certain that was going to work. It worked last time.
Which is really smart to, like, have that fake out. Because, like, everyone watching this is like, well, I know how you get rid of the Yeti. You just smash the pyramid. We all know this. And then so, like, it's nice to, like, have that fake out. Which I like to imagine the Great Intelligence just did to fuck with Jamie.
I was about to say, because there's no real reason for that Yeti to be carrying around a pyramid.
It's just like, yeah, I just imagine the Great Intelligence like, hey, you, like, you, that Yeti right there. Yeah, that one. Here, hold this. Just, it's going to be funny. Just to point out, this episode doesn't exist.
It's on the DVD.
It's on the DVD, so it's
but
not.
It's not animated, which I think is one of the first ones we've watched like that. A reconstruction that's on the DVD.
This was the first reconstruction I ever watched. Because this serial and the one before, Enemy of the World, were like both missing. They were both like rediscovered rather conveniently in 2013, the year of the 50th anniversary. They like came out like on iTunes. And so like I just bought them both and watched them. And before that, like I had always avoided the reconstructions. I was just like, if it doesn't exist, I'm not going to watch it. Which is kind of how I view a lot of things. I don't watch, you know, like, the Easter Bunny either.
Really, I loved Hop. Shout out to Brian Lynch.
And then we got to episode 3, and I was like, oh, so this is what this looks like. This isn't bad.
So it was better than you expected.
I think at the time I was like, I don't know if I could do this, like, the whole thing. But I can live with it for this one. The one sad thing about it is because, like, much as the novelization points out, this is historic. The first footage of the Brigadier doesn't exist.
Yeah.
We technically, I think, saw his boots in the previous episode, but it wasn't even him. It was a stand-in.
Doesn't have the Nicholas Courtney, like, boot twinkle.
But Victoria's out in the subway tunnels looking for the Doctor. And she finds him.
And the Brigadier. Well, he's the Colonel.
He's a Colonel, but he's the Brigadier. He's immediately the Brigadier. One of my first notes for episode 3 is just on all caps. And here he is! The mustache!
The mustache!
The reason that I picked this serial is because I love the Brigadier. The Brigadier is, like, possibly my favorite non-Doctor character in Classic Who, after maybe, like, Ace McShane. I love the Brigadier so much. Like, some of that's down to the writing. I think he's very well written, but also, like, a lot of it is just Nicholas Courtney. Because sometimes it's kind of a thankless role, because he's, like, an authority figure, and he's a military figure, and a lot of times, especially, like, during the Third Doctor era, like, he's the guy whose job it is to say, no, Doctor, you can't do that, and, like, that's not fun. But, like, Nicholas Courtney makes it fun. He's always got this twinkle in his eye. It's like, oh, fine, go do your thing. Like, he's like your dad. I love him. He's my favorite.
Like my dad?
Not your dad. Like everyone's hypothetical dad. Maybe like Joe's dad. Like he's got the best raised eyebrow this side of Leonard Nimoy. He's my favorite. Even in like reconstructed stills, like he just comes through as the Brigadier.
Now they're all going back to the base and the Colonel says that he's taking over from the dead guy.
He's the replacement.
The replacement for, yeah. And then the Travers and the Doctor reunite. And they're very happy about it. They're like, yay! And there's hugs and tea parties and beard stroking.
I'm so obsessed.
Meanwhile, Evans and Jamie are sort of lost in the tunnels. And then there's this whole scene where they just stop to get some chocolate.
They pass a vending machine.
This episode doesn't exist, so I'm kind of wondering if this was like product placement time.
It's not. It's like an in-joke, actually. Like, the chocolate's got the name of, like, a producer or something. Yeah, I forget who it is, or, like, a writer or something. It's someone in the production crew has their name on this chocolate.
Meanwhile, Chorley is freaking the fuck out. He's like, I need to get out of here. I am too important to be stuck here. Because they're surrounded by fungus. There's no real way out.
There's no way out anymore. There was when he first got down there, and now he's trapped. He's like, how will the people read my stories if I'm trapped here? I need to go get my information to the people.
Travers is sort of worried, since he brought a bunch of stuff back from Tibet, that he maybe brought the Great Intelligence with him. Which, spoilers...
He did.
Did he bring it with him, or is just the intelligence, like, hanging around, and it's like, oh, hey, the Yetis are here, and once, like, the Yetis got turned on, like, oh, hey, the Yetis got turned on.
But I mean, like, isn't that the same thing?
I don't know, that makes it sound like there's, like, a cursed object or something. Amongst all the, like, equipment, there's a monkey's paw that when you rub it, the great intelligence comes out.
It's a ball, so you rub the ball, the spear balls.
No, we're moving on from this.
Just rub the balls. The Colonel holds a briefing, which is just, hey, we're going to recap.
Here's what you missed.
In this recap, the Doctor is also like, hey, look, they've upgraded the Yeti.
Just in case you didn't notice. They look different, don't they?
Scarier, right? I think they look scarier. Don't you think they look scarier? They look scarier.
What do you think, children at home?
Are your parents scared?
Also in this scene, they talk about the fungus and the mist. And they say, it's not poisonous, but anyone who goes through it never comes back. So it's not poisonous, but if you touch it...
You die. And it's like surrounding like London. It's got London in a web of fear. Mm. That is a line in the novelization.
But it didn't have to be a line in this podcast.
Now it is.
This scene is very good of immediately like establishing the Brigadier as someone who is take charge and has better ideas. Part of the scene is like, no, the Brig's here now. He's a colonel, but he's the Brigadier. He's Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart is who he is. They do a really good job early on of like, he's like getting everything in. And he's like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to have a plan now. I don't know what you assholes were doing before, but I'm here, goddammit, and shit is going to get done. Chorley's going up to him and even like figures out a way to like, diplomatically he gives Chorley like a little assignment in a way to get him out of the way that makes him feel kind of important.
This is after he's like shot down Chorley's, like Chorley is like, hey, I want to leave. Like, can we just go above ground and get a helicopter and get over the mist? And the colonel's just like, you're stupid. We have no communications. How are we going to get a helicopter here? That your plan makes no sense. And he's like, what? We just found a tall building.
Yeah, I love that scene because, like, hey, isn't there buildings out there? Like, I've heard that they're tall. It's like, there's this building. Is it tall? It might be.
Buildings do that sometimes. So they start trying to figure out what they're going to do. They web the explosives up so we can't blow up the tunnels on them. So what are we going to do? And the doctor's like, he like pulls his glasses off, bites the corner of them and goes, if we give the explosion some wheels, they're going to put it on a trolley and like roll it down a hill so they can't web it up. And then they'll be able to get away in time before it explodes and collapses the tunnel, which is a really cool idea. That never happened.
Also, I think at some point, Jamie and Evans split up. Evans is like, anyway.
Peace out.
I'm going. And they kind of bump into each other, and Jamie's like, you're still here. Evans is like, yeah, turns out there's no way to get out, so.
Well, I think at first he's like, well, you know, I decided, you know, I couldn't leave you, and you needed my help, and blah, blah, blah. Not really, I got lost.
I think it's also supposed to make him seem a little bit more suspicious. I think anytime someone just sort of goes away for a while and then comes back, it's supposed to add to the idea of, like, this guy might be going and reporting to the intelligence, or he might be doing intelligence things. He might be controlled by an intelligence or something.
Victoria, back at the base, finds something familiar. She finds a Yeti chess piece.
That's what we call them. There's, yes, like, these little Yeti figurines that I call them, the Yeti chess pieces. And they're talking about it, and, like, Anne says something about there being four of them. Victoria's like, no, there's not.
There's three.
And the doctor is very concerned. You basically eventually learn that they're kind of like tracking devices for the Yeti.
But anyway, the doctor had this idea to put the explosion on wheels, and they're getting ready to do it. And then he suddenly remembered,
Jamie's
in the tunnel. So I guess we have to get him out before we can blow some things up.
Meanwhile, the Yeti just straight up goes into the area where they've stored the explosives.
Just web them all up.
Because then some guy opens the thing. There's a shit ton of fungus in the explosives room.
Which is honestly a godsend. Because otherwise we would have gone through like three episodes of just, if we throw the explosives in the air.
And it hasn't worked yet, but let's keep using explosives.
What if like we like tied the explosives to a swallow?
What if we got a helicopter? Chorley, stop with the helicopters! It's not gonna be a thing, okay? No helicopters.
Chorley is kind of having a conversation with Victoria. He's throwing some kind of accusation at her, like, you came in here to mess with the explosives, and how else would you have gotten in here when it was all locked up? And she was like, we just arrived here in the TARDIS. And like, you know, our time machine.
In the novelization, it's like he charms this information out of her. In the episode, I just remember being like, why the fuck is she saying all this? He wasn't being very charming. She just sort of started talking. And she's like, oh yeah, we travel in time and blah, blah. I'm like, Victoria!
He's just being a dick and she's being kind of not too bright in this scene. Because again, they don't know how to write Victoria. Victoria is whatever the plot demands her to be.
Like, if they could write her like they write Anne or Astrid.
If they could write her as consistently as they write Jamie. A lot of the times, she has to be a liability. And that's a shitty thing to do to a character. We don't like the character that's always being a liability.
And I like Victoria. I do. I just don't like what they keep forcing on her. But anyway, he's like, oh, okay, you guys have a time machine, that's great. And the doctor comes in, Shirley like rushes past him to get out, and the doctor's like, what's his problem? And then she's like, oh, I just think he wants to get out, and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, says something about the TARDIS. And he's like, wait, you told him about the TARDIS? And she's like, oh no, should I have not? And he's
like,
you
don't think he's working for the intelligence, do you?
And he's like, come on, Victoria, for fuck's sake! And he goes to, like, open the door and it's locked. And he's like, oh, damn it!
In this scene, he gets the maddest that he's ever gotten, and someone tried to blow him up earlier.
I think I've only seen him angrier once, and that's actually at the end of this serial. We'll get there. Jamie and Evans eventually make it back, and they hear thumpings from inside the base on a door. They open it up. And they let Victoria and the doctor out of the room. And they're like, well, we have to go find Chorley because he's going to go try to steal the TARDIS. And so they leave to go find him.
Spoiler alert, it's not very successful. Chorley just disappears.
He stops being in the serial kind of after this moment. Until the last episode where it's convenient to remember he exists.
Again, like I said, though, like this is a lot of, oh, we need them to get out of the way so we can do plot stuff at the base. Because that's exactly what happens.
They're being moved around like Yeti chess pieces.
On a Yeti chessboard.
Can I groan at you guys? Is that something I'm allowed to do?
No, we're great.
No.
Oh, okay.
We're carrying this podcast. I don't know what you're talking about.
So Travers and Anne are like doing whatever they're doing, and they hear a scream, which frightens them, and me, by the way. I was like, holy shit, what is that? That was frightening. They go to check it out, and there's a dead army guy. Is he webbed up? I think he's webbed up. And he has the chess piece, or it's like there with him. Travers has found this, and he backs away or whatever, and a Yeti comes and attacks him. And that's the end of episode 3. And we are now into episode 4.
Which exists. The rest of them exist now.
Yet another Yeti episode.
I waited an extra 2 days for that.
You're welcome. Anne hears Travers yelling about being attacked by the Yeti, runs to go and see what it is, and then she runs into a Yeti, and the Yeti knocks her out. And then the Yeti proceed to drag Travers away. But they leave Anne. Not sure why.
I mean, she's pretty badass. You'd think they would want that.
Great intelligence isn't so intelligent, is he?
The great intelligence is not great at plans.
He's just the sort of okay intelligence.
I'm trying to figure out when they start calling him the great intelligence. Like, they just keep calling him the intelligence. And I feel like he's the one who's like, I'm the great intelligence.
And everyone's just like,
like, I am the great intelligence. You're an intelligence.
Stop putting superlatives on it. Meanwhile, Team TARDIS is looking for Chorley, and they're going to, was it Covent Gardens, I think? Which is where they left the TARDIS. But they can't get there because it's blocked off by webs. And they're like, oh no, what if Chorley made it before the webs showed up? That would be bad. Let's not explore that any further.
The doctor goes to take a sample of the fungus, and to do this, he borrows Evan's tobacco tin. There's still tobacco in it. The doctor's like, that's fine, and just takes it and dumps it on the ground.
I think he dumps it in his
hand. Oh, in his hand. Evan's is like, I want that tin back.
So the doctor scoops some fungus into it and then closes it up. And he's like, all right, you can have it back, but, you know, don't lose it.
The fungus reacts to being, like, fucked with. Like, they try to take it off and it makes this awful noise and they're just kind of like, and it's, like, really effective. Like, you, like, actually feel like it's a thing that's happening.
It definitely feels this layered effect that they've got going on where they have, like, practical webs and they've got, like, this sort of weird sudsy overlay. It feels alive. There's also, like, flashing lights involved. There's a lot happening to achieve this one effect.
Yeah, they weren't fucking around.
They take the sample and then they go back to the base. While they were away, shit happened. They notice the webbed army people. Anne's okay-ish. Then the colonel, Brigadier, he starts to wonder if Travers may be in league with the Yeti because he's gone.
Travers knows all about them. Like, he brought them here. He's actually a pretty good suspect.
This is all kind of his fault.
And then we get a scene where the doctor basically goes, all right, I'm going to let you guys in on everything. Here's what the intelligence is. Here's the what the TARDIS is. And he's telling this to both the Colonel and Captain Knight. So he only tells the Brigadier about it in the book. Captain Knight isn't there at all, which I think is actually a little bit better. Like, and I think it might just be in a retrospect sort of way, because it's like the doctor trusts him a little bit more.
No, I think I like Captain Knight there. They're doing a thing. Again, they need Captain Knight there because Captain Knight needs to be the one who says, that's ridiculous. And then the Brig goes, no, I believe it. That's how you establish someone as being smart or trustworthy in Doctor Who. They have to immediately be on board with what the Doctor is doing. They have to be like, ah, yeah, that makes sense. It only really makes sense if what the doctor is saying is true. Otherwise, the Brigadier is about to make a bad... He still makes a bad decision, frankly. It is kind of a thing of, like, if the doctor was just, like, a crazy person, he's, like, acting on bad knowledge. But no, the doctor does have a TARDIS and is a time machine.
Yeah, like, the Brig's like, oh, you have a time machine that's here and it can get us out? All right, let's go. Let's get a mission to get the TARDIS, like, immediately. Let's organize this. Let's go.
It's far-fetched, but it's the only thing we've got.
He puts things in motion so effectively.
And then Evans gives the doctor the chess piece that was on the dude's body. And I think that's when he realizes it's a homing device and he sort of deactivates it, which I think he, like, puts it in a vise and, like, rips the bottom off of it or something. Then they notice that the other pieces are missing.
He pretty much immediately accuses Evans of, like, being in league with the intelligence, and Evans is like, every time something happens, gets blamed on me. I'm not a beg. I don't even want to be here. But every time something goes wrong, somebody blames me for it. I hate this. I hate it here.
I'm just the driver.
I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
And then to even further get blamed for stuff, Evans gives the doctor the tin of fungus. They get this, like, glass case with gloves in it, and he's going to open the tin up, and he opens it up, and there's nothing in it. It's empty. And then the doctor's like, like, Evans, did you fuck us over? Are you with the intelligence? Which, why did it disappear?
Don't know. Once we find out who the person is that's in league with the intelligence, that person isn't here, is he?
Nope.
So, don't know.
Well, I mean, I think he's at the base.
He must have been at the base and, like, maybe swiped it or something. I don't know. They keep doing this thing, talking about things that, like, come to nothing with the Brigadier and Evans. Because Evans keeps saying his catchphrase, I was just a driver. And, like, he keeps talking to the Brig, like, hey, remember me? I was a driver. And the Brig keeps going, like, I guess, yeah, whatever. Which, again, I think is supposed to be, like, a suspicion thing. But it never really comes to anything. It's just, like, the Brig is like, I don't remember you. You're not important.
Which is kind of rude. You should remember your driver.
And you should tip him.
Especially if he makes such great faces.
And has those cheekbones.
The doctor's like, I need to go above ground. I need to fix this sphere, and I need pieces, and I ain't got pieces. And he's like, I'm going to go above ground. And Captain Knight's like, okay, but you're going to go with me. And the army's going to go above ground, too, in a different direction, I think, or something, to get to where the TARDIS is, to bypass the fungus. And then, meanwhile, they're going to try to go through the web in the tunnels as well. So they've, like, split up. So, like, see, there's Arnold, some dude, and Evans that have taken sort of this trolley cart thing, and they're going to try to go through the web. Evans is like, fuck you guys, no, this is dumb. This is bad. But Arnold and the other guy put on gas masks and stuff, and they're going to go through the web. If we, like, call out or something, pull this rope back to save us. Because they're, like, on the trolley, and the trolley's attached to a rope. So they start going through. Evans is holding the rope. There are screams. He pulls the rope back. Arnold's not there at all. And the other guy, his mask is just gone, and he's hella dead.
Just the most dead.
Covered in webs and dead. And then Evan runs. Then we just get, like, shit tons of action scenes of the Brigadier and his group of people attacking the Yeti.
And dying a lot, mostly.
It was a bad idea. Maybe if they had gotten to the TARDIS, it might have been worth it.
But they don't.
Although, again, this is the thing with Charlie, too. Can any of them get in? Like, A, can any of them get in? And B, once they get in, like, the Doctor can barely fly this thing. These people don't know what they're doing. They're going to get in, open the door, be like, wow, this is bigger on the inside. And then, like, okay, now what?
I don't know. Maybe they were going to bring it back to the base. I don't know. That's really dumb. Like, how would they have done that anyway? Is that what the trolley was for? The cart?
Maybe, but then, like, but they went above ground, and, like, I don't...
Well, they were going above and under. Over, around, under, and through. Life's a lot like tying your shoe. Also want to say... During this war scene between the army and the Yeti, it is definitely reusing music, I think, from Tomb of the Cybermen.
It did sound familiar.
Because actually, I think it's the same music that Vince sang in that episode. That...
Which is weird, because it's the Cyberman theme. It's the Cyberman love theme.
These are the Spider Yeti. Spider Yeti chicken nugget robots. Across town, the Doctor is in a store, and Captain Knight is keeping a lookout, and also being like, man, it's hella loud over there. I hope they're not dying a lot. They are. And he's like, can you, like, hurry up in there? We need to go. And the Doctor is like, I haven't found the right shade of screw that I'm looking for.
Shade?
The right, you know how screws work.
You know. Like tools and shit. And,
the right shade of screw.
Shade of screw is like this really nasty erotica story.
No.
That was the sound a zombie makes.
I was so bad, I think you killed him. And he is now undead.
So anyway, he's like, I only need like two pieces. I want to run into the back real quick. And because the Doctor is taking forever, the Yeti arrive and kill Knight. The Doctor tries to karate chop a Yeti and then gets knocked to the ground.
Which, like, he knows it's a robot. I don't know why he thought that was going to work.
I'm
going to
hit it in the neck. It'll be fine. Knight is now dead, but he has a chess piece on him. I feel like this death is kind of on the Doctor's...
Because he didn't hurry? I mean, like, what's he going to do? He needs that shade of screw.
This would not have happened with, like, a newer Doctor, because newer Doctors have sonic screwdrivers. You just sonic that shit. The Yeti stop, and then another whistle happens, and they leave.
Because that's how we get out of that situation.
It's really the writers being like, I don't know, fuck, they get new orders.
Well, I mean, to be fair, though, spoiler alert, the Great Intelligence plan involves the Doctor being alive.
So any times that sort of happened, it's because, like, his guy is there, or the people he needs. The Brigadier is, like, sort of, like, running around in this warehouse as people are slowly dying left and right, and he's, like, the only one who gets out. And they all sort of return to the base. The Brigadier returns... And he is, like, at his lowest point.
Yeah, because he fucked up. I feel bad. I really do.
He is, like, legitimately sad. He's like, and it seemed like no matter where we went, there they were. And the doctor's like, oh, fuck, dude. Check your coat. Check your pockets. And he's like, why? What? And he, like, starts pulling stuff out, and he has the last chess piece. Doc, I think he, like, goes to, like, throw it out of the room, and he opens the door. There's Yeti there. They come into the room, shortly followed by a bug-eyed looking Travers.
That's the end of Doctor Who.
It was so weird that that's how it ended.
And they do another episode, and it's just been dead since 1960 whatever.
Yeah.
8, 9, I don't remember what year we're in.
Anyway, it was really cool that you had me on the last episode of this podcast.
We thought that would be a nice little thing for you. Oh, wait, no, there's an episode 5.
What's it called, Joseph?
The Intelligence's Design.
Okay.
So, Travers is talking, but he is not talking.
He's talking a lot like Padmasambhava.
It hurt my throat, because he's talking like this.
I have to say, he's better at being the Great Intelligence than the last guy was. He's not as hard to understand. He's not as inconsistent.
He's also a little scarier.
It's also, and it might also be because it's somebody we know and like that is now evil.
I mean, we know him. I like him.
But he's like, I'm the intelligence now. I want your brain, doctor. Give me that brain. Because he wants to absorb his knowledge into...
Super smart.
He says to the doctor, your mind surpasses that of all other creatures. Which, like, calm down. Like, all you're doing is feeding his ego.
Really, that is the last thing the entire universe needs.
The doctor's like, well, I'll never do that. And he's like, well, you have to kind of submit to it willingly, otherwise it doesn't work. If you don't, I'm going to kill your friends. But if you agree to this little brain transfer, I'll free everyone. Which is bullshit. He's not going to do that. He's like, I'll give you an hour. And I'm going to grab Victoria and take her as a hostage.
Because that's the only thing we as writers know what to do with her.
They don't give him an hour. They give him 20 minutes, but it feels like an hour.
Oh, I'm saying an hour because it was an hour in the book.
That makes sense, because in the show, it's 20 minutes, and a lot of stuff happens in this 20 minutes. Way too much stuff happens.
You say it makes sense to be an hour for the amount of stuff they do, but it makes sense for it to be 20 minutes. Because why would he give him an hour?
Why would he give him 20 minutes? Like, I never understand that. It's always like, I have this decision for you. I'm sure you're going to want to think about it. I'm going to go over here and twiddle my thumbs for a while. Don't come up with a plan. Like, just think about this decision. I'm going to go play this game of Sudoku.
He takes Victoria as a hostage, and they leave, and Jamie's immediately like, well, we got to go get her. The Brigadier's like, no, you're stupid. We need to come up with a plan first. And Evans is just like, here's a plan. What if we give the doctor to the intelligence? That's what he wants, right?
And he said he'd let us all go, and I like that part of it.
He is a shitbag, but he's just very, very open about it. He's not being sneaky and evil. He's just like, hey, I don't want to die. Let's do the obvious thing, huh?
Yeah, he's not being sneaky and evil. He's just being evil. He's like, I don't want to die. It's fine. Just like, yeah, I'll be a shitbag. Whatever. Give me my tobacco back.
Jamie and the Brigadier are offended by this, but the doctor's like, yeah, if I can't figure anything out, I will. Don't worry about it.
And if I do give myself up, Jamie, you're going to have to take care of Victoria, and both of you are going to have to take care of me, because I'm going to be a baby.
I want this so bad!
Because, yeah, we didn't really explain what's going to happen. The intelligence is going to soak up the doctor's brain, and then the doctor is going to have the brain of a baby.
Can you imagine just Jamie and Victoria and a little baby doctor on the TARDIS?
There has to be fan fiction.
I'm going to find it, and I'm going
to
read it.
My favorite thing about that scene is at the very end, it's like how long do I have to do that? Be like, and then the doctor's like, until I grow up. And I remember thinking, that never happened.
Also, Jamie just looks like, oh my god, I am not ready to be a dad.
That is the exact face he makes in that scene. To be honest, this is my favorite trope. It's a thing that happens a lot in fanfiction, that a character will just be reverted into a child, and, like, somebody is now responsible for them.
It doesn't just happen in fanfiction, either. It happened on Buffy once. Remember Tara?
It's a good trope.
And, I mean, also Band Candy. There's also an episode of Star Trek Next Generation where that happens.
It's so
Fan Candy was played for laughs, though. Tara was played for sadness.
Is there any fan fiction trope that hasn't been done on Star Trek?
So the Jamie and... The Jamie?
The Jamie.
The Jamie.
The Jamie and Brig.
Jamie and the Brig are going to go try and find them. And they leave Evans to watch the Doctor. And I'm like...
Even though everyone's really suspicious of him.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out he's not like... whatever, but still, kind of a stupid move.
He's also, yeah, not good at his job.
But the Doctor and Anne go to work on the sphere. They're like, we gotta do this really quick.
Which they don't. It takes a while. Like, longer than 20 minutes.
But it's fine, because you get to watch Anne being an amazing scientist. They show them, like, working on stuff, and it doesn't work at first, and they're like, oh, wait, I, you know, we should try this, and... when it works, she's like, yeah!
It's really cool to watch them be science bros for a while. But I can't stress this enough. I don't mean to brag, but I know how long 20 minutes takes.
You went to college?
Yes, I went to college.
So Jamie and the Brigadier leaving doesn't really go anywhere, because they immediately open a door and there's a bunch of suds there. So they just come back and they're like, so how's the sphere coming? And they're like... oh, we've done nothing. They get the sphere working. They're like, okay, that's good. So what does that mean? Can you do something with that? And they're like, nope, but now we can try to figure out how to control it. And they're like, you've done very little. We're really mad. The Doctor just does not care. He's just delighted to be doing science. Then they leave to go try to find another way. Victoria is brought to the intelligence. The intelligence stops being Travers. Travers is like, Victoria, where are we? Oh no, you need to run. There are Yeti here. And she's like, no, no, I know. We're in a trap.
It's really rather adorable almost. And it's sad. He's just like coming to and he's like, oh no, there's Yeti. And it's like, oh, we're fucked. Oh, I missed a lot.
Back at the base, the Doctor has made a controller that works on the spheres, but only
in a really short range.
And like basically a foot and a half.
Which, by the way, at this point, Anne's like, how much time do we have? And the Doctor's like, 12 minutes. Plenty of time.
It's been, like, way longer than that.
And he's like, well, now all we need to do is get it to work under verbal commands. So we're going to fuck with that for a bit. And he's just, like, watching the sphere roll around on the ground. And he's just like, ah!
I mean, they are, like, giggling every time something they do works. It's great.
Even though lives are on the line, and the Doctor might get turned into a baby.
Again, that could only be great.
There was one time that the Doctor was turned into a tiny baby-like thing, and it was awful.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That didn't happen.
No, you guys, it did.
We don't know what you are talking about.
He turned into a little Dobby guy.
No, that doesn't make... You're thinking of Harry Potter.
Confused.
I'm pretty sure it was a finale of some sort.
No, that doesn't make sense. That would be a terrible idea.
You're not wrong. Travers and Victoria are just hanging out, waiting for anything to happen. And Arnold sort of stumbles up, and he's like, kind of fucked up a bit. So he's not dead. Sort of secretly talks to Travers, and he's like, I don't think the Yeti know about me. And he's like, you should go tell the Doctor where we are. Get this message to him. So Arnold goes to do that. Arnold helps a lot. And in the book, it says that, I mean, spoilers, Arnold's the guy.
Arnold's the bad guy, you guys.
In the book, though, it says that he's only sort of under control. Like, when he's under the control of the intelligence, he does stuff. But then when he's not, he doesn't remember being under the control of the intelligence. Which makes sense. I mean, that's the same thing that happened to Travers. So even if one of them is under the control of the intelligence, even when they're not, then they wouldn't know. So when they're being suspicious, so you could have them doing nice things and bad things.
When it's eventually revealed, everyone seems confused by the concept of the intelligence. They're like, it was Arnold? And they're like, well, it's not Arnold. It's a floating intelligence that was possessing Arnold. And they're like, what does that mean? Even though this has all been explained.
It literally happened to Travers.
No one's quite getting it. So, like, you're the intelligence? No, no one's the intelligence. It's the cloud.
It could literally be anybody, and maybe was.
It's the Clue ending where everyone did it.
That's my favorite ending.
It's the best one.
Back at the base, Evans turned into a 60s... sitcom lady. The sphere like rolls into the room and he jumps on a chair like it was a mouse. I think in the book it literally says like a housewife on a sitcom, but I don't know these 60s sitcoms of which you speak.
This book is very critical of this episode.
It is. Though I like that it was Evan, like it was a dude. That's a nice little twist on it. Like, it's not Victoria.
But it's also the worst dude. And the idea is that, like, he's so awful, he's like a housewife.
That's true. But now the spear works under verbal commands. And so they're like, let's put it in a Yeti. Let's go find one. Jamie and the Brigadier are going to look for Victoria, and they bump into Arnold. And instead of going to continue to go find Victoria, they just return back to the base to talk to the doctor. Evans hears them coming. He doesn't know that it's them coming, so he hides behind the board that shows where the web's spreading. The Brigadier just walks in and sees his feet, and he's basically like, you're stupid. I can see you. Get out from behind there.
To be fair, though, normally that's a good hiding spot in Classic Who.
The Brigadier is the only person that can see people hiding in plain sight.
Which makes him especially clever.
I see your feet. And they're like, where's the doctor? We need to give him a message. And see, again, it's just they needed them to leave so that they could come back and find out that the doctor and Anne were gone.
It's almost farcical.
But not really.
But not in a fun way.
It's more just like people keep coming in and out of this base and no shenanigans are happening. It's just they keep doing it. So they find a Yeti, Anne and the doctor, and it's coming for them. And the doctor's like, all right, get the control unit. And Anne's like, what? You have it. He's like, oh, I do? And they're like just fumbling around trying to find it.
Frantically checking pockets.
And then he finally gets it out and he like presses the button like right when the Yeti's almost up on him. And it stops. The doctor pulls his screwdriver out. I get excited every time he uses his screwdriver.
We're so close to that idea.
He pops the sphere out and swaps
them. Which takes forever, by the way. I think it really got stuck in there.
And then we cut back and Evans is doctoring up Arnold. And he's like, I'm a really great doctor. I finally have something good I can do. Evans goes to get something, and he sort of screams for Arnold, and Arnold runs in there. And he's like, look! And then it just shows a room. And I'm like, what is he screaming at? And then the room explodes into bubbles. Like, but he screamed and called him over before anything happens.
I don't know if it's just because they didn't have the time or the budget, but in that scene where Evans is being a doctor, he's really proud of putting a Band-Aid on Arnold. He's like, I'm a good doctor.
No, slap. That just sounds like Evans.
I did a thing. You did one thing.
But I did it.
The what is clearly just a miniature of a room explodes into bubbles, and that is the end of episode 5.
It's also very quiet. Like, there's no sound for this.
I still liked it a whole bunch. I'm really impressed any time they do anything, to be honest. Like, now it's like, oh, that was clearly a miniature. But, like, to, like, sit down and take the time to think out how something like that would work and do it, I think it's neat.
And now we're into episode 6.
Episode 6!
The 6th one.
I didn't have a title.
Does this mean that you won't have titles for the episodes anymore?
No, I will. Give me a title, Chris. You're funny.
Episode 6.
Chorley's Horse.
Okay, there we go. Woe to the Chorley horse.
I just wanted that one to be one so bad. There aren't any horses.
Chorley's Trojan horse. I don't know.
Yes, and don't call me Chorley.
Evans is like scared of the bubbles and runs off. Arnold's very unhappy. The doctor and Anne are walking back with their Yeti. And he's like, hold up a second. And they stop. And then the Yeti just like runs over them. He's like, all right, Yeti, stop. Stop, stop, stop. I forgot I control you. He's like, we don't know who might be under the control of the intelligence. We might not want him to know that we can control a Yeti.
He seems really certain it's not Anne, though.
If this was kind of smart writing, it would have been her. Because she's really smart and we like her. Like, I found myself, because I'd forgotten what happened in this episode, being sort of suspicious of her. Like, it would be the most devastating thing if Anne was working for the intelligence.
But the show's not that smartly written.
The really smart thing would be Anne or Jamie.
But no, it's Arnold and nobody gives a shit.
But like when it's revealed, I was like, oh yeah, that guy?
No, that makes sense.
Well, to me it was like, well, it's definitely not the Brigadier. It's definitely not Evans because that's too obvious. It's too obvious that it's Chorley. So it has to be Arnold if it's not going to be someone we care about.
And so someone point out, we are in episode 6. The 20 minutes is still not up. This 20 minutes has crossed episodes. These episodes, in theory at least, are, like editing does, compressing time. They fiddled with the sphere. They fiddled with the control box. They tested it. They went outside. They found a Yeti in under 20 minutes.
This goes in with, like, the whole unit controversy thing. Just time's all fucked up right now. 20 minutes is like an hour. But he's like, I don't want to let people know about this Yeti. So they let the Yeti go back under the intelligence control until told otherwise. So they're like, you stay here for like 90 seconds. We're going to run off and then you can do what you were
going
to do.
Like, one of the Grand Intelligence is like, hey, you're going on a coffee run.
The intelligence needs coffee.
And so like, they're going to turn around like, attack Yeti. And there's just like a Yeti like 3 miles away with a bunch of Starbucks. Just like,
I like that in this London that is basically deserted, there's still a working Starbucks.
Starbucks is around because of the unit dating controversy.
But the Doctor and Anne return to the Brigadier and Jamie. And there's a lot of, like, from this point on, there's a lot of dialogue, like, that's very contrived of being like, what are you guys up to? And they're just like, oh, nothing. That nothing happened. Like, it even matters because eventually the Doctor's just going to tell, like, Jamie about it later. But,
which, when he does, Jamie's like, oh, how do you know which one is ours? And he's like, good question.
Like, he didn't think a lot of this through.
Ours is the one 3 miles out with Starbucks.
And then they all get caught by Yeti, basically. Everyone. And are sort of starting to be led back to the intelligence. Evans gets caught separately and picked up by two Yeti.
Literally.
And then the Yeti are leading them all to the intelligence. Arnold is like, hey, these Yeti aren't very smart. If you cause a... He's talking to the Brigadier. He's, if you cause a distraction, maybe I can get away and do something. The Brigadier trips over, like, the Doctor. Everybody falls down, and Arnold ducks into a crevice. And because nobody can see people hiding in plain sight, he gets away. And everybody else continues to be taken to the intelligence.
There's a lot of sitting around waiting. There's a lot of scenes of them just, like, not moving, just, like, sitting around while the Yeti guard them, and they hang out.
Which doesn't make sense. Why not just take them straight there?
Like, yeah, it's not like the Yeti need to rest.
It's not like the intelligence is getting things set up. It's already pretty much set up.
Maybe, like, the 20 minutes isn't up.
Like, they're waiting so much that the Doctor is just sitting there playing his recorder, as he does. And then this is when he tells Jamie about everything, and he's like, and I don't know which one's our Yeti. But he gives Jamie the microphone that they can talk into to control the sphere. And he's like, don't use this until, you know, it's appropriate. And it's at this point that Chorley finally shows back up, and he bumps into Arnold. Arnold's like, how did you survive? That's kind of sketchy. And Chorley starts, like, rambling off a thing. He doesn't trust Chorley. Anyway, they sort of head off. Do they head off together, or does, like, Chorley bolt? I don't remember. But anyway, they're going to wind up in the same place eventually. So they're all still waiting around. Anne wants to use the control box to shut down all the Yeti. And the Doctor's like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to face the intelligence. What's the fun in, like, stopping the bad guy now?
Well, he has a plan.
And then Evans gets brought in. The Yeti are like, all right, time to go. I guess that's what they were waiting for. They're waiting for Evans.
Who would wait for Evans? No one's waiting for Evans. That doesn't make sense.
They start going off. Except Jamie apparently hid in a box at some point.
And no one noticed. He hangs back. He's trying to call the Yeti. He's talking into the microphone like, Yeti, come here. Come here to where I am. And a Yeti goes by, and he's like, all right, now stop.
And it doesn't.
It's not his Yeti. It's just like, well, we missed one.
And he's like, ah. Oh. And then he turns right into another Yeti.
It's actually one of the better jump scares in the serial. It's like, oh, there's a Yeti there.
It turns out that's his Yeti.
Episode 6, that's our Yeti.
The Doctor gets taken. So he's like sort of gets separated from the rest of the group, and another Yeti brings a helmet to him, and the Doctor stops the Yeti, fiddles with the helmet, restarts the Yeti, and then they put the helmet on him. And then everybody gets brought to the Great Intelligence. That's when we find out Chorley's not the intelligence, Arnold is the intelligence. And then the Yeti brings Jamie in. And then there's this big pyramid in the center of the room that Arnold leads the Doctor to that he sits in.
I think I like how, like, all the Great Intelligence stuff is just pyramid shaped.
He has a theme.
And, like, at first it's like, that seems kind of weird. But then, like, all of our stuff is just sort of box-shaped.
None of his, like, stuff is very consistent. He's like, Yeti with webs and pyramids. What is your scheme here? Like, what?
There's no consistent aesthetic.
And he's like, and shag carpeting!
Which kind of makes me feel better about how in New Who it's just a grab bag of stuff. It's like snowmen and internet and, like, weird faceless things that whisper.
Yeah, he doesn't have a tangible body. He doesn't know how fashion works.
He doesn't know how to accessorize.
They're about to do to suck out the Doctor's brain through the pyramid brain scooper. Jamie pulls out the microphone. He's like, attack, Yeti, attack. And the Doctor just starts freaking out. Like, no, not now. And Jamie, like, starts pulling him out of the pyramid. Like, come on. And he's like, no, leave me alone. So he yanks him out. They blow up the pyramid. And they're like, day saved. And the doctor's like, son of a bitch! I went to all this trouble doing this thing, and all you fuckers fucked it up. I hate all of you. He's like literally throwing a tantrum. He's like stomping around, shaking his fists.
I'm trying to figure out what his plan would have meant. Because the intelligence wanted to suck up his brain. And the doctor was like, nah, I switched it, so I would have sucked up the intelligence's brain. So would the doctor have just had the intelligence in his head? Would he have just been, like, walking around the TARDIS, like, eating a sandwich, and suddenly he'd get a thought like, hey, you know what would be good in here? A pyramid. And have to be like, nah, shut up, intelligence.
Like having a really annoying roommate, but in your head. Who wants to take over the world?
Would he have, like, been able to, like, cordon that off, like, or would just he have the intelligence been part of, like, I don't know why that would have been better. He seemed really confident that that was a way to defeat the intelligence.
Would it have been, like, a Crichton Scorpius sort of deal?
Ah, man.
Like a Harvey situation?
I don't think there's ever been anything as great as Harvey. What a great character.
What a great concept.
Let's stop talking about Doctor Who and talk about Farscape now.
That's like the third time you've said this during the history of our podcast.
Farscape is a great show!
I want to read a section from the book real quick. I'd managed to switch off my Yeti guard and reverse the polarity on that helmet thing before they brought me in.
Dang!
He said reverse the polarity, which I don't think he said in the actual episode.
No, he did not, because that wasn't a thing yet.
He's just like, the intelligence is still kind of out there, probably.
I wonder if we'll ever see him again.
Probably not, and then they leave.
And it didn't for a long time.
And I think they actually technically met him before this episode.
It's okay. I was looking this up, and you would think that the snowman was the first thing that happened chronologically for the intelligence. According to TARDIS Wikia, like, it's not that the snowman happened after this, but the intelligence lost his memory. There's a whole, like, series of novels about the Brigadier that explains all this, and it's weird.
Oh, sounds dumb.
This just happened second.
I know, it sounds dumb, and I don't believe it. I choose to ignore it.
The great thing about Doctor Who is that you can do that.
There's no Doctor Who canon.
So then Chorley, though, sort of comes up and is like, wow, what a weird adventure, huh? You were great, Doctor. I'm going to make you famous. You're gonna be, like, everywhere.
You're going to be a household name.
How much of a hero you are.
The Doctor's like, nope.
No.
People all over this country are going to know the word Doctor.
I find it kind of funny that the Doctor doesn't want to be known at this point.
When he gets so spectacularly big that he has to die inside of a robot. That's another thing that just didn't happen because it was stupid.
Why did the robot grow a beard? Anyway, so then Team TARDIS leave and get lost in the subway, which this is the second time that a serial's ended like, wait, where's the TARDIS?
I don't know.
And they're like, we better find it fast, though. What if they turn the trains back on? And then they run away. So that's it. That's the end of the Web of Fear. It's time, right?
It's time.
Final thoughts!
Live one! Oh, I love a live one.
There's things about this that I like a lot. Like, I think, like, again, like most six-episode serials, there's a lot of padding. Like, there's not really a plot to speak of in this story. It's just kind of repetitive stuff happening. That said, there's lots of characters that I like. And there's lots of fun moments in it happening. Anne Travers, everything she does is amazing. Like, and the scene of her and the Doctor doing science is adorable. Evans is horrible in a good way. Charlie is horrible in a bad way. This is the first episode with the Brigadier, and that just makes me happy. It's the beginning of a beautiful friendship. And for that, I like it.
I like this serial a lot. I think the effects are great. They did some really weird, interesting things, and I think it totally paid off. We're starting to get a lot of really excellent side characters. Yeah, out of this one we have the Brig, who everyone knows. Even people who've only, like, seen New Who stuff, you still know of the Brigadier. Like, that's how big this character is. Anne is great. I love her and she's perfect. I wish she, like, had stuck around.
Yeah, I don't think we ever see her again. I'm pretty sure that we don't.
I mean, if you were UNIT.
Yeah, it would make sense for her to be in UNIT, actually. I don't think she does. I'm almost certain that she doesn't. But, like, I can't remember, like, definitively.
It's a shame.
Does Professor Travers come back?
No, I don't think Travers comes back. I think, like, Travers is firmly with the Yeti.
The Yeti are fun. I prefer them in their fuzzy chicken nugget form. I don't think they're as scary as I think the people who made this a serial thought that they were. But they're still good. They're still a really good Doctor Who monster. really the great intelligence is terrible at plans. Every plan he's ever had has been, like, kind of convoluted.
Has there been a Doctor Who villain that's been good at plans?
No.
Shirley.
Yeah, Shirley was pretty good.
Yeah. but yeah, this is a really solid serial, and I like it a lot. And I can't wait to get to the Brigadier.
Like, officially. You guys didn't talk a lot about it, but I really like Travers. Seeing him again was nice. Same character 40 years later, which is really interesting. Just this sort of secondary character. Like, that's never really happened before, I don't feel like. Like, it was interesting just, like, this was, like, a first real sequel. It was cool seeing the Brigadier, because, you know, I'm not really seeing much. I think he was in, like, one episode of Sarah Jane Adventures or something like that. So I don't really know a whole lot.
Which, I'm really sad that he was never in New Who. They talk about him a lot in New Who. Having the Brigadier show up in New Who and interact with, like, any of the New Who Doctors would have connected New Who to Classic Who, like, better than, like, any amount of montages of classic Doctor faces would have.
Oh, also, this is the first serial in a while that we've had that hasn't had racism in it.
Right?
And a significant portion of it exists.
It's two, like, serials in a row.
For a six-parter, it's so much easier to watch a six-parter that exists than it is to watch one that doesn't exist.
You're lucky you weren't doing this podcast in 2012 when that would not have been the case.
Yeah, I like the serial a lot. I thought it was pretty good. It's been a pretty solid season so far, other than, you know, unfortunate racism. This season's been pretty good.
There's a reputation that the Second Doctor era has, and it's sort of solidified in this season, of being kind of repetitive. It's mostly a bunch of Base Under Siege stories. It's really this season that is that. It's kind of a lot of the same story beats over and over again. And especially if you're watching them all in a row, it can get kind of samey.
But they also are doing different new things at the same time. Because, like, I mean, the last serial was wildly different than anything we've ever had.
Yeah, the last serial is very different. It's the one that's sort of the most different of this season.
Again, sort of maybe seeing that, but I mean, like, with this serial, but it's also, it is like a sequel, so it makes sense.
And they're still entertaining, because it's this TARDIS crew, which is a pretty good TARDIS crew. You can never go wrong with Two and Jamie.
They are adorable. And I love them. Anything you want to plug there, old Sherry? What the hell?
What just happened?
That was weird. I'm uncomfortable.
Never do it again.
I'm going to start that sentence over. So, anything you want to plug, Cherry?
Ye old Cherry.
By the time this goes out, season 2 of Brains will be, like, coming out. At least one or two episodes should already be out by now. Watch season 2 of Brains. It's really good. We're all really proud of it. You know, everything's bigger and better. Watch season 2 of Brains. I also want to plug The Job Interview, which is a comedy sketch that I wrote and Joe directed and edited and did everything else on, other than acting, which Tony acted in it.
Yeah, Tony was in it.
That also is a thing.
And you can find that on mindypineapple.com.
Okay, I have my own web series, Relativity. That's coming out in December. We don't have a date for it yet, but, like, in the future, look out in the sort of December region for my web series. That's going to be a lot of fun when it comes out.
If you liked this episode, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on iTunes. If you'd like to help us out even more, go to watchyourassalon.com/support, and there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can just get to by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of cool rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records. This one is 3+ hours long because of technical issues. You can get day early episodes of all kinds of cool stuff. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode. You are awesome, sir. You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's tumbles without an E because of Tumblr.
I hear that guy is really cool.
He is.
He's pretty great.
I hung out with him once. Tune in next time when we talk about Fury from the Deep with special guest Melissa. Stay calm and wrestle on.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Here we go again.
I wonder what it'll be this time.
Yes, I wonder.